Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Yeah, I'm just here to defend myself since apparently every time you guys have a podcast, you just make fun of me or insult me in some way.
Yeah, so he was listening last week when we, when one of the Twitter listeners,
Shane Huffman, I believe.
Oh, look at that. You even have his name.
Yeah.
Suggested that we get. Yeah, well, yeah. Suggested we have LeBar on to talk about recruiting going into the early signing period. And I guess I said he was a douche or something?
He said I had made a douche comment back.
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember what you said. I'm not even sure the conversation happened. But LeBar's joining me tonight. McDonald is claiming he's sick. I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know if I buy it.
I don't. I just have you noticed that every time I'm on here, he's not here? That's not a coincidence, I feel like.
Yeah. And we talked about you having you on before. He said he wasn't going to be here. So I think he just wanted to drop out. We've got quite a bit to talk about with football. There's the early signing period that starts Wednesday morning. Unless you listen to this first thing after we upload, it's going to be in the early signing period. Between our last recording, the Matt Wells contract details have been released. And then, of course, we got to talk about basketball. We've got the big game this week against Duke on Thursday night, Madison Square Garden. And then your question. So what do you want to talk about first with football? You want to talk about the Wells contract? You want to talk about recruiting?
Let's talk about recruiting because I'm sure that's the main reason why I'm here anyway.
Yeah. No, well, not the only reason. Not the main. Oh,
every time I'm on here is always recruiting or baseball. So.
And that's okay.
It is okay.
The other thing of note I wanted to point out, we had a new listener join the 23 Personnel family last week.
Oh, this was hilarious.
And he live tweeted his listening experience. And it was like, I'm going to say like a car wreck, but not because like what he said was bad. It was, we couldn't look away. Like we were just like, what's he going to say next? What's he going to say next?
I was working, so I didn't really get updates. I had to read through it later.
It was great live. It really was. One of the biggest things was we had a really lengthy conversation to start the podcast about our top five movie vehicles. And I know,
by the way, Michael's was way better than yours.
Oh, whatever.
I just want to make that point clear right now.
We all know that you've got some questionable opinions on things, food included. But now that I've drawn this out for, you know, a minute, the biggest thing that he was talking about was like, well, I'm listening to a Texas Tech sports podcast, and there was no Texas Tech sports in the first 20 minutes.
Which is funny because when you were first starting it, I think you jumped right into sports and all the STP people were like, yeah, all the sports podcasts I listen to have another topic.
Yeah.
Well, so it's kind of our fault.
It may have been. The other thing is we went really long. I think we were at an hour and a half last week. My brother, when he was asking me, when we dropped from recording twice a week down to once a week, was asking, he's like, or he told us, well, you need to be recording like 2+ hours. I need content. It's like, well, I don't know if we're going
to
do that.
Well, I have to make a 5 hours. I have to make a 5 hour drive on a Friday. So hopefully there's enough where I can at least cut part of that trip down.
Well, I don't know if you want to listen to your own podcast again. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever listened to a full episode. I'm usually on like the first first download just to check, make sure everything's working. Yeah. I don't know if I ever listened to the whole thing.
Well, I'm one of those people that hates hearing my voice because I think I have a very monotone, boring voice. This mic helps a little bit, so it's really whether I'm in the mood or not.
Well, 4.5 minutes in, we're getting to sports. So let's do recruiting. We are looking at the Texas Tech recruiting class. If you don't follow the Possible Red Raiders weekly recruiting updates on Staking the Plains,
I don't think anybody caught that I had a huge error last weekend. First of all, I have errors all the time, my story. But if you noticed on Twitter, if you go to the Staking the Plains, it says Possible Red Raiders, a weekly recruiting, and then it ends it.
That's it?
I forgot to add the rest of it. I did it like Sunday night.
Labar is our recruiting writer expert for STP. Does a weekly update. The biggest thing, again, is we're getting ready for signing day, which starts Wednesday the 19th. Sorry, I'm trying to like change pages on my phone and I just missed a button. So we're good.
This episode is brought to you by Fat Fingers.
Yep. Okay. Sorry. So currently Texas Tech has 15 verbal commitments. I think there was a story that came out, recently that Coach Matt Wells is expecting to sign about a dozen players tomorrow. So you would think most of the guys that are committed will be signing. And they include, let's start on the offensive side. Quarterback Maverick McIver.
Great name. I still stand by. That's a superstar name.
It is. The best thing, though, was when Travis Kuntz committed.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes by Iceman. So Maverick to Iceman is going to be a thing.
Better call Kenny Loggins. You're entering the danger zone.
Yeah, definitely. offensive lineman Trevor Roberson, he's expected to sign. He decommitted then recommitted for a little bit. Landon Peterson.
Well, I don't think he really decommitted. I think he was just committed on the fence and then just kind of said, yeah, I'm here.
Landon Peterson, offensive line from Permian, Odessa Permian, is expected to sign. Simon Gonzalez, the high school tight end, is expected to sign. Travis Kuntz, the JUCO tight end, is expected to sign. Let's see, who else is on offense?
Bryce Robinson. Well, actually, that's defense.
That's defense. But
he is expected to sign, though.
Trey Cleveland, wide receiver. Cameron Cantrell. They're all expected to sign. On the defensive side, you've got, I'm going to butcher his name, Gilbert Ebeneme, defensive end.
I think they did a pretty good job by that.
Yeah. Well, I skipped over Velton Gardner, and I think that was the one guy that he's committed, but he's not expected to sign tomorrow, Wednesday, whenever you listen to this.
I think he's on the fence a little bit.
Athlete, running back, inside receiver type guy from Skyline. There was a offer that went out either late last week or early this week to the Illinois running back commit. I think he reaffirmed his commitment to Illinois recently, but that may have been a little not like you were wavering in your confidence with Gardner.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
But maybe he'd indicated he was going to keep looking, so you didn't want to miss out on a running back.
You have to make multiple offers because you don't want to have a class of nobody at a certain position if you need one.
Yep, especially when you're losing. Oh, who are you losing at running back next season?
Trey King, DeMarcus Felton.
You're losing two guys.
Because Ward returns. You still have the freshman.
Henry.
Henry and Tarogic Thompson.
And with Thompson being able to redshirt, he and Henry will kind of separate a little bit where Henry will be a sophomore, Thompson will be a freshman.
Do you know where Thompson's from?
No, I'm blanking. And I with the look on your face, I feel like I should know this.
No, this Irving guy.
Irving, of course.
I don't really count it. He didn't go to an Irving public high school, so I don't really include him in my obsessive Irving athletes and coaches, but he is an Irving guy.
Also on defense, you've got a guy, Alex Hogan. He's a cornerback that's committed. Tyreek Matthews, linebacker. I know he's expected to sign.
Hogan's one of those guys that was decommitted but recommitted once he talked to Wells.
There's one guy we haven't heard of, and it's Cooper Lake out of Bowie, Austin. I think he's the blue shirt offer.
He's
been asked to come in, and I can't speak tonight, apparently. Not remembering exactly how a blue shirt works. If he comes in like next December, against the next class, or
I want to say blue shirt's one of those deals where maybe maybe this is gray shirt thing where he's not on scholarship for like a year. I don't remember exactly.
Maybe. But then you got another defensive end, Tony Bradford, another linebacker, Bryce Robinson. I know Robinson's expected to sign.
Yes.
Cameron Cantrell, I think I've already said that. So those are your current commits. I think, like I said, the majority of that class is expected to sign. There's some other guys that were committed elsewhere that are possible/probable. There was a defensive back that recently decommitted from Nevada, Dominic Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like his crystal ball projection is 100% to Texas Tech, so that should be...
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where he told 24/7 Sports, if you go to my possible Red Raider updates, it has the link to that story, that he was basically between Nevada, Colorado State, and Texas Tech, and obviously decommitting from Nevada is basically saying you're out of it, so it's us and Colorado State at this point. But I would expect him to come to Texas Tech.
Sorry about the dog. She's upset that we have a guest here at the house. We are at HQ South tonight, since McDonald decided he was, quote, too sick. Then, of course, you've got guys that were formally committed that are still on the fence about recommitting, like Stephen Parker.
Luckily for Texas Tech, he's waiting. I think he likes us still. I believe TCU's in contention. I can't remember the other school, but we're still going to be in it till the end. Kansas too, because of Emmett Jones, and he's a former South Oak Cliff guy, so that makes sense.
Yes, I think Emmett Jones was the head coach at South Oak Cliff.
He was
before he came to Tech.
Yeah, because we got long time ago, we got two recruits that ended up doing nothing for us. JF Thomas didn't even come here because of grades, and Jemiah Johnson is he still on the roster?
Because I'm pretty sure he is, because he came as a safety and then got
He was a high three-star, low four-star safety, and I remember the most interesting thing about his recruitment is I liked him a lot, but he was committed to Texas, then he was committed to North Carolina, then he was committed to somewhere else, and then he committed to Texas Tech. He flipped over on signing day, so he was committed to like four different schools.
He was from South Oak Cliff from the 2015 signing class. As a prospect, it was a 24/7.
Yeah, that was that big 2015 class that would have been even bigger if we had a Carlos Thompson, Jared Stenham, and a few other guys stay put.
Yep. The guy you already mentioned, JF Thomas, was a high four-star guy that didn't end up making it anywhere.
Connor Dyer ended up not playing because of injury. Madison Kimnon, who's on the offensive line, on-again, off-again starter. Brent Fiocco transferred to LSU. I think he's a rotating player there. I don't think he has a huge impact so far. That was weird because that was such a this one of these like if you were if you're on the Stars Don't Matter fence, this is one of those cases where that 2015 class, maybe out of all of Cliff's early classes, might have been the most disappointing out of the group.
In terms of like actually performing on the field, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because production wise.
Yeah, they just vanished. For a little bit of history, let's actually go back and look at that real quick. Brain for Hulko, Corey Delphine.
Oh, Corey Delphine. Oh, my gosh.
He's at Tulane currently.
Yeah, he committed in January the year prior, and I was really excited about him. And
he's a big guy.
Yeah. We knew he was going to be good. He was unranked at the time. And, you know, there's this theory that when guys commit to Tech, the rankings go down a little bit. Well, he committed to Tech, and you can't four-star.
Yeah, he was your second highest commit in the class behind Brain Vahoko.
For whatever reason, he just couldn't. I don't know if he couldn't figure out the playbook or what, but he just couldn't really see the field except for like one play where he scored a 25-yard touchdown, and everybody freaked out about it.
Yep. Also in that class, you mentioned Madison Akamnanu, Connor Dyer went to the same high school as he did, but he medically retired. Is that the thing?
Yeah, it was a medical thing.
Jameel Johnson, Tony Brown was in that class.
Yeah, he transferred to Colorado.
Kiki Kuti, probably
the Kiki Kuti's turned out pretty well.
Okay, so we're 7th on the list in terms of like highest rating.
So we're 1-for-7 so far.
2-for-7 Madison Akamnanu.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
So Jonathan Giles also in that class.
Yeah, 1,000-yard season transferred LSU. That's done nothing there.
Devontae Hinton. He vanished.
Yeah, I think recently. He did well for like a season. Then he transferred. I can't remember why.
Trace Ellison.
Oh, he was part of the Robinson Castaneda Dakota Allen burglary arrest.
Broderick Washington. There's a guy that's
pretty
on the
good. Longview guy.
Quan Shorts.
He got kicked off the team for wasn't it like buying weed or something?
It was like his second or third possession.
Yeah, I think it was at this apartment complex called Scarlet or something, and I'm pretty sure I know where he got it too, because there were some apartments near me that there was definitely something going on.
Yeah. Dante Thompson was in that class. He's still on the roster, doing okay.
I mean, he's a lower recruit, but I think he's done all right for what he was expected to do.
Christian Taylor, he's on the roster
I think he's a special teams linebacker at this point.
Mm-hmm. Lonzel Gilmore. Defensive end.
I had high hopes for him just because of how athletically gifted he is, but I don't think he quite figured it out.
Cody Wheeler.
Isn't he?
He's offensive lineman.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he's backup or third string or. I think he's still on the roster.
Terrence Steele, offensive lineman. He's a starter.
Yeah, he's actually probably your second best one out of the group, and he's, I think, your lowest rated recruit that year.
Just about. Right above Paul Banks. And then unrated Paul Staywars.
Yeah, starting center. So if you're on the Stars Don't Matter group, that was a really strong class for you.
You had 20 commits, and I think of those 25,
I would say six or seven are on the roster, and maybe four were acceptable with how they turned out.
Yeah, not optimal. Put it that way.
Yeah. We're probably getting a little bit off topic here.
Okay, dog, be quiet.
Yeah, the dog's telling us to move on too.
Yep. Currently your 2019 recruiting class is ranked 8th in the Big 12.
Which is coaching turnover, so don't freak out.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we were kind of preaching for a couple weeks that you really could consider your recruiting class zeroed out, that the whole thing had to be rebuilt. Nationally, you're 58th. So you've got some room to build. This is not the end of the recruiting cycle. Obviously, you've got 2 more months.
Well, yeah, you can still add 4-star Stephen Parker. You can still add that athlete from California that's now open. I believe they offered an offensive lineman. I can't remember from where, but he basically had an offer from Utah State. So Matt Wells knows him well. If you like punters, they offered the best punter in the nation. So
they did, because the guy your current or your most recent punter kicker commit flipped to TCU this week.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Peyton Powell. I think someone made a comment about him not having a Tech offer. I think at one point he did. I don't know if that still stands or not, but it's another Permian kid decommitted from Texas. We may be able to see him, which if you're in that group of recruiting local guys, you have to be happy that Trevor Robinson and blanking on his name, Landon Peterson, are both committed to Texas Tech, being from Odessa and the Amarillo area.
Yep. So I'm currently going through some of your confirmed offer list. You had a previous commit, Levante Chenault, decommitted.
Yeah, he's probably gone. I think he's likely going to Kansas, if I had to guess, following Emmett Jones.
Let's see who else. Sorry, I'm like scrolling through this
list. I know you had Brandon Joseph decommitted, but he is now head of Northwestern. Markel Reed, another defensive back, he's head of the Boise State. I believe that may be it as far as former commits go.
Looks that way. Sorry, I'm going through the list here. You're probably set on defensive end with the two commits you've got. And I mean, obviously, you would welcome Stephen Parker back.
I mean, well, I'm guessing I'll probably add a few more guys, and maybe we'll see a couple more offers in the next week or two, but they'll be like, you know, last-second guys that weren't highly recruited or anything, just some coach saw something in them or they need a void and think that person can do so.
The biggest thing is
there's also I forgot his name, but there's some JUCO corner. Oh, there we go. Brywin Murray, who's a JUCO cornerback. He's basically siding between Texas Tech and Virginia
cornerback
Tech.
Or a linebacker?
Cornerback, which is good considering Texas Tech had like five defensive backs and I think four of them decommitted. One of them ended up committing back, but I think Keon
you're
Stewart
net minus three.
Yeah, I think Keon Stewart still has his recruitment open, so we can still get him back. But yeah,
yes, he's a corner from Coffeyville.
Yeah, so Kansas. They still need another cornerback, so that makes sense.
Yeah, from the offer list, the confirmed offer list, you've got some guys that's still available. Obviously, Wells is out there, and his staff are evaluating, making offers, and going to continue to build on that class.
And of course, this, you know, he's been going at it for like a few weeks, so I wouldn't. So when this recruiting class is final, basically in February, I wouldn't judge his recruiting based on this class. I mean, he basically had to put together a broken puzzle and try to fit guys into places. The 2020 class is when I think you can first judge him.
Yeah, and it's not like the 2019 class is going to be all that bad. You're not going to finish eighth.
No. It'll probably be seventh or something. Yeah, just a tad better, but it's probably not going to be quite as bad as 58.
But speaking of Wells, the contract details came out recently. 6-year, $18.8 million contract, which I think is the number you've seen thrown out a lot is that he's going to average $3.1 million.
Yeah, I think isn't it slightly below Kingsbury, I believe?
I think Kingsbury was at 3.4 when he left.
It was something like that. I remember reading that it was just a tad lower than Kingsbury's.
So Wells will start off at $2.8 million, and then he gets like a $200,000 raise in the first year, and then $100,000 raise every year after that, the length of his contract. The other thing that came out were the assistant coaches' contracts and salaries that were approved at that point. You still have a few position coaches you're waiting on until after. Well, it's probably after the early signing period, but before February to get those last couple hires. But guys like Yost and Patterson, their salaries were announced. Both will be making $600,000.
I think that's I don't know the exact figures for Gibbs, but that sounds like a little more than what Gibbs was getting paid.
I think Gibbs was right in that range. Kevin Johns was making $350,000, so it's quite a bit higher.
Well, yeah,
although Johns wasn't the acting offensive coordinator like you.
Well,
like,
yeah, it makes sense. Yost Cliff was basically the head coach and coordinator, so it made sense that Johns didn't quite have the same salary as Gibbs did.
Yeah, his was an inflated position coach salary, essentially.
Yeah.
Then you got guys like Javon Bonite, that is you're going to be your outside receivers coach, Luke Wells, your inside receivers and tight end coach.
Gotta love them tight ends.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about
it. Me too. I've been a huge, this is not because of Gronk, this is before Gronk and the Patriots and all that, but I just always been a huge fan of tight ends, so when I heard that from Yost, I got all giddy, like, oh boy, we're going to have a bunch of tight ends, split them out wide, put them next to the tackle, put them at fullback, let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. He's a big guy, too. He's like 6'5", 250.
What I can't wait, accused double murder Aaron Hernandez used to be used as a running back. I'm curious if Wells will use, like, maybe Simon Gonzalez, since he's a little smaller, will he use him as a running back? That would be very interesting to me.
Put Dante Thompson back there.
There we go.
Because he's probably on the small side for what Wells wants, or Yost wants, as a tight end.
How many times do you have in the roster now? We're going to have Coons, we're going to have Gonzalez, you have Thompson.
It depends on where the guys that were listed as fullback end up. Like if they get moved to offensive line, or if they're going to get transitioned. Because I think we heard, don't hold me to this, but I think I read that Tyler Carr was moved to offensive lineman. But of course, he was one of the bigger.
Yeah, he's like 6'5 something.
He was like 6'5, 250 or 260 at that point.
Some Amarillo school. I can't remember top of my head.
Who was the other guy? It was Killian.
Not Killian. That's basically
Connor.
Connor Killian.
There Connor Killian. So I'll be interested to see where they end up. But after signing day, you should have at least three. When you add the two, and then Dante Thompson. And then we'll see where the other fullbacks end up. I don't think Yost uses a fullback much. I think he just runs, well, because he said he runs 11 personnel, 96%. So the 11 is the one running back, one tight end.
If we have three tight ends, could we run
23 personnel? Oh my gosh, it's all coming together.
You're ahead of your time.
We knew this
was coming.
What was funny is we're like, maybe we should rename ourselves the 11 personnel, but like 23 personnel is actually a lot more of a possibility now than it was.
If that happens, you just need to like celebrate.
We will. We will definitely celebrate.
Just start popping bottles. Hit up the club.
Popping bottles. Oh my goodness. So the defensive position and assistant coaches are still. I think that's where the gaps are. One guy we didn't mention on offense is. Offensive line coach, he followed Wells and his staff over from Utah State. But then on defensive side, on the defensive side, I think there was some flexibility because Patterson could be coach. He could coach several different positions. Yeah. So it allows Wells to go out and find, okay, well, I'm going to get the best available, whether it's linebackers or defensive backs or defensive line.
I think they have a Juice as a defensive back. He goes by Juice. I don't know anything else about his name. I just know he has a cool
name. Then I'll have to look into it. Do they differentiate in their coaches between safeties and corners, or is it just defensive backs? So research that should have been done before I brought this up.
I think if I had to guess, the fact that you have an outside receivers coach and an inside receivers less tight end coach, I would guess it would just be defensive backs, but I don't know. Because you have 10 assistants, right?
Yep.
So Yost is... I don't know if he's going to be like a QB coach also, but Yost, offensive coordinator.
I would assume so, yeah.
Offensive line coach, running back coach, outside receiver, inside slash tight end, and then you have...
Is there a running back coach currently on the staff, or is that one of the open positions?
I think that's an open. I'm not quite sure. Okay. And then you have D-line, linebacker, defensive back, special teams. That's 9 I'm counting right now. So maybe they would.
So you could do safety.
So you probably could unless Yost is not a QB coach, and then you would need a QB coach in there.
Yeah, because you saw with Gibbs, you had a defensive back coach and a safeties coach. Because you had, I'm blanking on the defensive back coach.
Spavital? Or was he linebacker?
He was linebacker.
I don't know. They're all canned anyway.
But it was him, and then there was Brett Dewhurst. He was a safeties coach.
What? Didn't he used to be a GA here?
He was a player here too.
Okay, this was a little bit before me. So
2008.
Yeah, I think he actually made a tackle on
a kickoff, in the 2008 Texas game, blew some dude up. So recruiting class, by the time you listen to this, we'll have a pretty good jump to it for the 2019 recruiting cycle. Once that gets kind of cleared up, Wells will have some time to look at filling out the rest of his coaching staff. The coaching salary pool, which is interesting. I don't know if anybody's like followed up and gotten a solid answer on this. When Wells was first hired, Hocutt said that the assistant salary pool would be bigger than it was for Kingsbury. But when the details were announced, it's actually smaller.
Okay, so
assistant salary pools, I think $3.1 million for Kingsbury's, it was like $3.4 million. He's still got a couple positions to hire.
Okay, so that Juice Brown guy I was talking about, he is listed as a defensive backs coach.
So corners. Well, we shall see.
And for some reason, I thought Luke Wells and Matt Wells are related, but looking at their pictures, I don't think they are.
They're not brothers?
Well, one is Caucasian, one's African-American, so unless they're adopted.
No, that's I think you're not looking at the right picture then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, never mind. That's DeAndre Smith. This, okay, there are brothers. Man, it's been a long day. Yeah, I'm looking up at the photo instead of down. Okay, so they are related. Scratch everything I just said in the past 15 seconds.
Way to go. Yeah, dude, he looks just like him. Definitely his brother. Okay, so
I blame the website.
Once we get through signing day on Wednesday, all attention will be turned back to basketball because you know this. Texas Tech is facing Duke on Thursday night. Could have been a top 10 matchup. Texas Tech actually dropped in the rankings this week. Not a big deal. Everybody, calm down.
How do you feel about that, by the way?
I don't care.
You don't care. Yeah, here's the thing.
It's too soon because you still got, like, we were talking about this before we started. You still have ridiculous AP voters that have their own rules about who gets to be, who they will rank where. Right now, without any kind of accountability, without there being a level playing field all the way across the early season non-conference part of the schedule, rankings don't really mean a whole lot. When you start getting into conference play and everybody's playing conference games, it's a little more even. You can take a little bit more weight with those rankings. But right now you drop from 11 to 12, you won your game, but your strength of schedule has been pitiful outside of like USC and Nebraska.
And
that number will go up.
USC is like 500, and literally every Big 12 team has beaten them, has played them so far. So even that one doesn't even look that great. Really, our only quote-unquote good win-unquote is Nebraska.
Nebraska.
Who is ranked 25.
But your strength of schedule will go up on Friday once they log everything.
I think they're a tad better than Incarnate Word.
I would hope so. Or Northwestern State, who I think was the lowest ranked team we've played, and like in the power rankings or Ken Palm rank, whatever they do.
Would we up like 53-10 at halftime or something?
Yeah, we were.
And the fact that we were like -6 or -7 in the second half, I was pretty. You saw the slack. Well, I wasn't very happy about it.
Okay, but you were playing like your walk ons in the first half though, like Sorrell's got
in
the first half.
Yeah, like the last
2 minutes. Yeah, but still. Like, if that's the attitude, even in the first half. But yeah, the biggest thing, obviously, is going to be what the Texas Tech defense is able to do to slow down the Duke offense. It's one of those matchups that everybody keeps pointing to because Duke, you know, depending on what kind of power rankings or whatever they want to point to, not power ranking, sorry. Like advanced stats and like Ken Palm and that kind of thing. They have like
Haslametric.
Haslametrics. Yeah, they have like they either have the number 2 offense or number 6. And Texas Tech has got the number 1 or number 2 defense. So Texas Tech is able to force a little some turnovers, not as much as it was last year, but what they are able to do is keep offenses from scoring easily. They make you run out the shot clock a lot more. And they don't give up open or easy looks.
They are first place in opponent field goal percentage, which I guess is pretty good if you rank first place and not allowing your other team to make baskets.
Yeah, there's a stat that I saw, and again, I'm not quoting great numbers, but it was like the second half defense for the basketball team was ridiculous. Like you were allowing teams to shoot like 20% or 25%.
Yeah, because usually if you look at teams, you've seen this throughout basically Beard's era and basically throughout college basketball, that you score maybe 30, 40 points in the first half, halftime adjustments, defense get a little bit worn out, and next half they score 40 to 50 points. Usually your offense goes up. But if you look at the season's totals for Texas Tech, the opponent's scoring is actually higher in the first half than the second half, which is very rarely do you see that.
Yeah, you've had some slow starts and then just outstanding halftime or in-game adjustments to where you're – I mean, yes, you gave up more points in the second half to like a Northwestern State, but that's an outlier because you were playing so many.
Well, also, if you only allow 10 points in the first half, it's a little hard.
It's hard to keep that up.
It's hard to, you know, have them score less than that.
Right. So Duke has lost this season. Shocker. They lost to Gonzaga.
That was a close game, too. It was like a two-point loss, and they almost came back. The thing about that game is I was watching a lot of that Maui tournament. I was home for Thanksgiving. Didn't really have much to do. And Duke literally had missed basically three, like, point-blank, like, shots slash layups. They could have easily tied that game or won that game. And it was basically a game of who was choking more. Duke would miss a shot or layup. Gonzaga went and missed two free throws. Duke would miss a shot or layup. Gonzaga missed two free throws. Then at the very end, Duke missed two layups to lose it. So it was one of those they could have won, but it was basically who could choke more.
Right. But Duke has some unbelievable talent there. So this is the ranking stat I was looking at earlier. They have the sixth best two-point offense in the country. Gonzaga is the only team that's held Duke under 55% on two-point field goal attempts or conversions, which is just ridiculous, right? They're scoring, like, in their one loss, they were still able to score 55% on their two-point attempts, which is just driven by guys like Zion Williamson, who's not a great outside shooter or like a jump shooter. They rely so heavily on transition and getting you out to run and then just making you look really stupid by dunking and doing all kinds of highlight, alley-oop type stuff.
I think I was joking with somebody, probably like one of my friends, when we scheduled Duke, we were kind of like fake taking bets, like who is Zion Williamson going to poster this game?
Which I hope, gosh, you know, you really hope it's not like a, I don't know, anybody, but like.
If I had to bet on my bets on Davide, him trying to take
just a shot. That too.
Him trying to take a charge and Zion just like slowly moving out of the way to where he like hits his shoulder or something. And
it's going to get called for like a block. And he's going to throw the dunk down back in his face.
It's probably going to be him or Brandon because both those guys are notorious for they take a lot of charges, but they also.
They commit a lot of blocks.
Yeah, a lot of blocks too. So it's probably going to be one of those two guys.
And if it's not Zion Williamson, it's going to be like RJ Barrett.
Who actually may be better than Zion. Zion obviously has more hype. He's been known since sophomores because dude can like crank a ball back by his hip and dunk it. I mean, he's one of the freakiest athletes I've ever seen. But RJ Barrett's probably more polished. And if I had to bet a guy going off for 30, it's probably more likely going to be RJ Barrett.
And the other guy you should know about if you're not with those two. If you know about Duke, then you know, talk about Cam Reddish.
Three-pointers for days.
Yeah, he's going to be the outside threat. If you commit defense to the inside,
you're keep a body in front of him. That's the key that's the key for him. Don't let him get open. And actually, another guy we need to keep out for is Trey Jones. A lot of people aren't talking about him because he wasn't a top three player in the nation like the other three guys. I think he was like 21st. But
21st. He's like the fourth highest. Yeah,
he's the fourth highest recruit. He's 21st in the nation. No big deal. But he can shoot the open three. He can drive on you. He can shoot mid range. He has great vision. Can find these guys wide open. So Trey Jones is going to be a big problem as well. In my opinion, he's probably going to be a bigger problem than Cam Reddish will be.
So lots of talent on that side of the ball. Obviously, Duke has recruited really well the past few years.
Really,
yeah. In my humble opinion, I think Duke has done really good on the recruiting trail.
Fun fact, did you know that for every year since 2014, Duke has had a top three pick in the NBA draft?
No, but it makes sense.
Jabari Parker, Jahlil Okafor, Brandon Ingram, Jason Tatum, and Marvin Bagley Jr.
Oh.
Now, only like one or two of those guys ended up being okay, but still, still have that stat, and they still boast about that stat.
I assume that streak's going to continue this season.
Well, yeah, they literally may have the top three picks.
Yeah, the options.
Like, that's not even a joke. They may have the top three picks in the NBA draft. They could have four lottery picks. I don't know if that's ever happened before. I think I got close one year of Kentucky, but I don't think that's ever happened before.
Yeah, it would be something to see. And so here's the thing. Go back to the game on Thursday. Your defense has its work cut out for it. your defense is going to have a really good night to allow your offense to do it. Because what the Texas Tech offense is, it uses a lot of time, just like your defense forces your opponent to use a lot of time. It uses a lot of time to move the ball around, trying to find an open shot. Yeah. It's going to have to be efficient, scoring on a lot of its possessions.
So basically you got to wear them out. They're fresh and they may not be quite as conditioned or whatever. So you just got to wear them out, be efficient, as you said. And the thing about Duke is they are freshmen. It's not like you're playing Villanova with a bunch of seniors where you know that even if they play bad, they're going to play good. You could get lucky and they just could have an off night, like just a bunch of freshman mistakes.
Your defense could force them to have an off night.
Yeah, I think they forced like 18 turnovers a game. Pretty high.
So Dan is having a Q&A post go up on Staking the Plains if you need to check that out. I'm not sure if it's going Wednesday or Thursday morning.
Wednesday
is what's going today. Today probably when you're listening to it. If you listen to it after Wednesday, you should go read it. We will obviously touch back on this game in our next recording, which may be a day later next week since today is December 18th, which means next Tuesday, our normal recording day is Christmas. We will talk about the Duke game. There may even be a post-game instant reaction, depending on the outcome of the game. We'll have to see.
So if we win.
If Texas Tech wins, there will be a post-game reaction.
But will they win? What do you think is going to happen?
Good point. We need to talk about predictions here. I don't see I have a hard time seeing everything working in Tech's favor enough to win the game. It may be closer than a lot of people might have originally thought.
I don't think it's going to be a 30-point blowout or anything.
Which is
what I initially thought, like in September when I didn't know where this team was at.
I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the Duke defense. I just know it's not as good as their offense. I just don't think your offense is good enough to keep up with even a slowed down Duke team based on your defense.
Well, yeah.
Defense, all the coaching cliches, defense travels.
Defense wins championships.
Defense wins championships, all that kind of stuff. Your defense really could keep you in this game. We just haven't seen, like, outside of this past weekend, we haven't seen a lot of offensive explosiveness. And this weekend, it really was just one guy. It was Jarrett Culver.
We need a USC second half type performance.
Need a lot of points.
Just kidding. We don't need to shoot 82%, but something around 50 would be nice. Now, luckily, Duke, once again, the freshman thing. Now, you may not realize this because we've had guys like Culver, Zaire Smith, and Kyler Edwards, who Beard specifically picks out guys who are going to play hard in defense the whole time. But think about highly rated recruits. Very commonly, they don't always try their hardest on defense. They're all about, give me the stats, get me in the lead. They don't always have their best defensive performances. So maybe Tech can get some easy shots in that case.
Certainly hope so. So if you look at, I don't know if you put any stock into this, but the ESPN Basketball Power Index, not really surprising. Duke is picked 70% to Texas Tech's 30%.
I thought you were about to say 69 there for a second.
Well, I rounded up.
It would have been a nice percentage.
Nice. And I'm not seeing any kind of line or anything. I don't know if I guess the ESPN app doesn't do that, but... So what do you think, what's your thoughts on the game predictions? How do you think it's going to play out?
I'll say Tech loses by about 10. Now it's not like a 15 point down, all of a sudden you're getting some guard time points, 10. It's probably going to be like down like somewhere between like 7 and 5 and they just get some free throws at the end type 10.
Yeah, so you're trying to slow it down and create more possessions.
Yeah, it's not a case where it's going to come down to the final bucket, but we're going to keep it at least respectable till the end.
Here's the thing. If you lose this game against Duke, your season's not over. You may drop in the rankings again.
Yeah, but it's luckily not, this
you've
drop.
Got the rest of your – you still have a non-conference game left, I believe, And then you've got...
Yeah, you have UTRGV with Jordan Jackson.
On the 28th, I'm going to that game. I got some tickets from my boss. And then you've got 18 conference games. So...
There's two long conference games, UTRGV, and then you have that Arkansas Big 12 SEC challenge people care about, but they also don't care about.
Yep. Sorry. I was thinking, I was going chronologically. You have one more conference game before, you have one more non-conference game before you start Big 12 play, and the Arkansas game is after you've already started. But your 10-0 start is the best since, what was the year, like 39?
1929. My grandparents weren't even born yet.
I think my grandparents were born. But I don't know their date of birth well enough to say they were in the first grade or whatever.
Yeah, I think mine was born around like 33.
But that 1929 team, I think they started off 12-0.
I don't remember exactly.
So if you get past Duke, you can match that, if not pass it,
because you're beating Duke. Obviously, that's 11. UTRGV is 12 at West Virginia, which
will be difficult. But West Virginia is not the team it has.
That's the thing. West Virginia is really a bottom half conference team this year. Like every game I watch them, they have not looked good. They don't really have the athletes to run the press. James Bolden hasn't really stepped up.
And then didn't...
Eason Maude, who I think one time compared himself to LeBron James, he's their leading scorer now. Their freshmen haven't really made an impact yet. So some guy that looks like Avery Benson's in their starting lineup.
Just because he looks like Avery Benson doesn't mean he's...
Okay, he's not that bad. I think I was watching... I think it was West Virginia... Florida. Yeah, I was watching West Virginia, Florida 2 weeks ago, and... West Virginia was down like 10 with 4 minutes left. And he kept them making threes that at least gave him a chance to win. So he's not a bad player, but he definitely has his moments.
So West Virginia is 6-4. This game's not even slated to be on TV.
They're not good this year.
Yeah. And then you host Kansas State, who's 7-2.
Dean Wade will be out.
They were picked to possibly top two or three. To finish in the conference.
I think they were finished. I think they were predicted second.
Second, yeah. But it was really high. You're like, wow.
If you read my basketball post, you know that I think K-State's a little overrated. We've beaten them three out of the past four times, including I think two of them by like average of like 20 points or something like that.
And then news this week was that Dean Wade is out indefinitely. It may have been the same foot he injured last season.
I think it's a minimum 2 to 3 weeks, like could be around 8 weeks. But either way, I don't think he's playing that Kansas State game.
Because that'll be January 5th.
Yeah, so that's about
2.5 weeks.
Yeah. So and real quick back on the West Virginia point, although they aren't that good this year, Tech was 3-6 in the row last year. You lost to the – oh, I said you. We – lost to the worst three teams in the conference standings on the road. So road games are definitely not easy in the Big 12. All because the team is bad doesn't mean we're going to win. So that's so that one will probably be a lot closer than we are expecting.
Yeah. So if Texas Tech beat Duke to get to 11-0, you've got the
UTRGV.
Then you got the road trip to West Virginia. That would get you to 12.
Yeah. Home at Kansas. Yeah. No, that. Yeah, that's 12. No, 13. That's 13.
That would be 13. So
the Kansas State would be 14.
And then Oklahoma would be the next game, and that's also in Lubbock.
Oklahoma is a very good team. They're better than last year. I know. I think Rayford Young got annoyed because people were talking about Trey in the broadcast. But to be honest. Trey was so good last year that they almost... I'm not saying Trey's a bad player. He's doing decent in the NBA right now. He's the,
by not far, as good as best. Luka.
Well, yeah, Luka's going to be like an 8-time All-Star.
we're going to talk about that here in a second.
I love Luka Doncic. My God. Anyway, Trey Young's doing pretty well in the NBA, but the Oklahoma, now that Trey Young's not there, they learn to play without him. You're starting to see players you didn't notice before touch the ball more and guys step up. Christian James is a baller. He's going to be an all Big 12 player. Jamayan McNeese is pretty dominant around the rim. You are not going to score easy on him. Brady Manick, obviously the skill set's not quite at this guy's level, obviously, but he looks like plays like Larry Bird. He shoots three wells. He leading rebounder on the team. They have a lot of nice pieces at Oklahoma. I really like this team.
So, and then you travel to Austin.
Haven't won since 96, so that's going to be a tough one.
Even though Texas is kind of stumbling a little bit early on this season.
Texas is one.
They're underperforming, probably.
Texas would be a good way to put it. Plays to the competition. They beat UNC earlier this year. Curlin Roach had 32.
And then they lost to Radford.
Yeah, they lost to Radford by two. They lost to VCU by one at Texas. And then that Michigan State game, they were up by like 16. I was watching my brother. When he goes to UT, and he was freaking out. And thank God Michigan State came back to win by like 10 or something. I was not going to hear the end of that.
So,
but they definitely played to their competition.
Yeah. Interesting next couple of weeks in the basketball schedule for the basketball team. All starts on Thursday night against Duke, 6 p.m. Central. Check it out.
Yep. Worst case scenario, they lose. We go down a few spots. Nothing happens. So
not a big deal.
All reward, no risk.
Let's get to some of your questions. Look at this. 49 minutes in, we're doing questions.
I don't think we're talking 15 minutes about cars and farming.
Hey, man, that was like 20 minutes. And then we had like an 8-minute farming and irrigation discussion and weather because we talked about the snow. All good things, man. I don't know.
10 inches.
I don't know what that dude's problem was. All right, Peter Puente. Is Duke the beginning of Coach Beard scheduling more marquee pre-conference games? Especially with the level of recruits increasing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because here's the thing. As we just like said 10 seconds ago, there's not a whole lot of risk in losing in scheduling games like this.
Well, you can have too many and be like 500, but like to have, like, if you look at Duke's schedule, sure, they play like Princeton and Yale and some other schools they creamed, but they have Gonzaga on there pretty good. They have they destroyed Kentucky. So, yeah, I like to have a few of those matchups because if you win, congrats, you're a top five team, you're really good. Everybody's looking at you, you get recruits, you get good ranking, stuff like that. If you lose, it's like, okay, well, they're losing the good teams. You still have plenty of time in Big 12 play to make it up.
Right. With the how long the basketball season is, losing a non-conference game, especially against a marquee team like Duke, it's not going to end your schedule. It's not going to end your season like losing a non-conference football game would.
And if you look at Chris Beard's scheduling since he's got here, he likes to schedule a few guys, have like a neutral tournament. So usually we've been playing these small tournaments. Like last year we played the small one with Boston College Northwestern. This year the small one against USC Nebraska. Perhaps we'll go to some bigger tournaments. I mentioned the Maui tournament earlier. That's like the elite Thanksgiving tournament. There's the Battle for Atlantis. That's probably like the NIT of the Thanksgiving tournaments. That's a big one if you can get to that one. I think Oklahoma was in there this year. So perhaps you can get into these bigger Thanksgiving tournaments and play some higher competition and really separate from the pack.
Yeah, because the past 2 years when you've played in a tournament like this, you've kind of announced your season, right? Because last season when you played Northwestern and it was supposed to be a close game, or Northwestern picked a bid, and then you beat them by 30. You're like, wow, that wasn't expected. Then you go against like USC. It's like, well, that could be a good game, and you beat them. And then you're like, well, Nebraska's supposed to be really pretty good. You end up beating them.
Nebraska's like, not quite. I think they were 26. They didn't quite get the votes. But Nebraska fans, I don't think they've ever won a tournament game, which, you know, we complain. I don't think we complain, but we don't say we have a large history because we went to our first Elite Eight. But imagine not even having a tournament win. Anyway, they were posting about, this is our best team ever. All their fans show up. They're up by like 11 the first half, and you win by 18. And yep. Culver drops 28 on you. I think at one point he banked into three and just did the Kobe shrug. I'm like, oh, well, I guess
well,
I'm on tonight.
If everything's dropping, then. I think scheduling games like this will continue. It will do nothing but help.
Probably at least that tournament, that and Thanksgiving tournament, and then one or two big games. Yep. Yeah. So a follow-up question, who do you want to play? Is there any particular school you would want to play? Like any team you grew up watching?
No, because I didn't grow up a big college basketball fan. I have a lot of in-law family that grew up or went to Kentucky. I think that would be a cool game to watch. Dan would
love that.
I'd be pretty cool.
Can you imagine if Texas Tech beat Kentucky, Dan would literally burn down his house in excitement.
He would do something because that man is all about Texas Tech basketball.
I was never a fan of any. I watched college basketball as a huge college basketball fan, but I always liked the Tyler Hansbrough, Ty Lawson, Wayne Ellington, North Carolina team. So I think playing them would be pretty cool. Michigan State of Tom Izzo, that's always a big program. That'd be a cool one to play. Maybe Indiana, that'd be interesting. Bob Knight's old place.
Mm-hmm. Because they were really good for a long stretch. I'm trying to think of other teams I knew that were good, but I'm
schedule high point. Get Tubby Smith over here.
Oh my goodness, I can't believe like
wherever Billy Gillespie is even in D. I think he's
JUCO. No, he's I think he's at Ranger College here in Texas. So yeah, besides like a Kentucky or something like that.
Where's
Syracuse? Maybe
Syracuse. Ooh, Syracuse. That could be
pretty cool.
Not anymore. I think this is Jim Boeheim's last year. If next year is his last year, then absolutely let's get Syracuse. If this year is his last year, then who cares? He's gone.
Yeah. So from TTU Preston, will Tech go down in the rankings if Tech beats Duke?
Okay, so here's the thing about the rankings thing. I totally expected this, and here's why. First of all, when you're looking at rankings, don't look at Tech is 11, UNC is 12. Look at how many votes they got. If you look at it, Tech was literally one vote ahead of UNC. So you knew that if they beat anybody good, they were going to pass them.
Yep.
And yes, I know UNC has two losses, but their schedule is ridiculous. Obviously, they beat Gonzaga.
Who beat Duke, so.
They beat Duke, yeah. I mean, they play a lot of good teams. They played, number 4 Gonzaga, number 5 Michigan, who's undefeated. So Michigan may be the best team in the country. They lost to them. They played UCLA. They lost to Texas, which doesn't look that great, but Texas is also a team that can beat anybody any night. And if you look at who Texas Tech played, obviously 25 Nebraska, 500 USC, 500 or below 500 Memphis, and a bunch of teams that probably won't make the tournament.
Any tournament.
Probably not any. I think Christian I was high on, but after watching them play and lose by 30-something, I mean, Tech's good, but I don't know if you lose by 30-something to Tech if you're going to be able to make the tournament. Anyway, the point is, if UNC has our schedule, they're probably undefeated too. You'd probably agree with that, right?
Yep.
And they also have more known talent, so if there's a tiebreaker, it's going to be, okay, who has NBA guys? They have Nasir Little, who, if you haven't heard of him, he's this dynamic point guard. He's got great hair. He can shoot from anywhere. He's going to be a top 5 pick, top 10 pick in the NBA draft. So that's why UNC is ahead of Tech, because they beat number 4. We've beaten a bunch of teams that a lot of teams would beat. That's just how it is. We're undefeated, but, you know, unless you schedule higher. I mean, yeah, that means something, but also a lot of teams would be – I wouldn't say a lot of teams, but there's a decent amount of teams that would be undefeated or close to undefeated with our schedule.
So let me ask you this. What was Tech's highest ranking during the basketball season last year?
6.
6?
It was the highest ranking all time.
Where were you ranked going into conference play, or were you?
You were 24th playing number 18 Baylor, I believe.
So
my bad, 23. You're 21st playing number 18 Baylor, I think.
So basically at this same point last year, you were in the 20s and you got up to 6th based on all the strength of playing the Big 12 schedule.
You got from 26 to 18 from being Baylor. You jumped up to 10 from being Kansas. You jumped up to 8th from losing to Oklahoma and beating number 2 West Virginia, I believe. Then you jumped.
That was a wild game, yeah, West Virginia game at home.
Yeah, then I think you jumped up to 7 from beating. I maybe get my games wrong, but I think you jumped up from 7 from just dominating TCU and beating Texas. And then I think you actually lost to Baylor, but jumped up to 6th next week because a lot of teams above you lost
yep.
to worse teams. Like ours was a 2-point buzzer beating loss to Baylor because Keenan Evans broke his foot or hurt his foot in the first half. Which is definitely a game you win with Keenan.
Yeah. Preston asks another question. Early signing periods is back to football, good or no? I think it's good. I think it's put Tech in a weird position this year.
I like it for the recruits because you've seen times where coaching changes happen. They just kind of, I guess, don't really care for a guy, so don't communicate with them. Basically say you don't have a scholarship without saying it. So it kind of forces them to keep the recruit. So the recruit's not looking around December, January, have to go to a JUCO or lower level because of a coaching change or something that happened. Yeah. It basically forces the coach to keep the recruit, which is good, for, obviously, for the kids.
Okay. Thoughts on watching the Utah State bowl game? Did you watch it?
Did not watch it. I was at work, but I heard it was very good for Utah State.
I watched probably most of the first half, and I wasn't like undivided attention. So what surprised me is I was you know, doing other things around the house or in the living room, and it went from 7-7 to 35-7 really quickly. I was like, what just happened? And then I was looking back, like, it was just bomb after bomb. And
the one play I saw was an interception that almost got returned for a touchdown, and it was 35-7.
Yeah, so the linebacker, whatever his name was, he separated the receiver from the ball from the receiver.
Wasn't targeting, though.
Nope. He led with his shoulder. He was maybe a defenseless receiver. I don't know. It didn't matter. It wasn't called because it wasn't a Big 12 crew.
If it was a Sean Johnson, it would have been called immediately. I think that Vontae Dorsey. I think that Dorsey's have been reversed. But I'm willing to bet like a large amount of money that Sean Johnson leads Texas Tech in career targeting penalties or almost targeting penalties. I feel like every other game he's being called or almost called.
I probably would agree. I mean, it's there's probably some things you can take away from that game. So you can look at the Utah State offense and say that's where Yost is trying to get Texas Tech. I don't think you're very far off. I do think you've got better talent.
Which I guess another point of that Utah State, North Texas game, and those who went Latrell maybe were like, okay, well, maybe this Wells guy knows what he's doing.
Keith, we have to throw in, he was trying to get
Latrell was coaching that game. Wells wasn't, yet his team still won by like 30.
Yep. He was trying to get a meme put together for Latrell. You were the chosen one. He was the scene from
the Obi-Wan.
And
I will say the one thing that did concern me is I heard when he was up a lot, they were still going fast, which personally I'm not crazy for. I think good teams know how to pace themselves whenever they need to be paced. Like if you're up 20 something like in the second half, I think you need to be able to learn how to put like 8-9 minute drives together or 7-minute drives. So that way the other team doesn't have like 6 chances to score.
But my counter argument to that is if your offense is working that way, it's still being effective, why change it, right?
Like all it takes is one drop or one holding penalty and that drive is killed.
But it's still, I mean, it's as effective to take that much time off than it is to put more points on the board, right?
Yeah. But the
risk you run of going fast, if your offense, like you were saying, you go fast and don't get anything, you're just allowing your defense.
Yeah, and then your defense is on the field for like
35,
40 minutes. I don't know. I like the air raid. I'm not in love with it like some people, but I like it. But I've just never been a fan of the go fast all the time. I think you need to be able to tempo yourself, which is something that Cliff started to learn in his last year. Just need to learn to tempo yourself and have long drives whenever necessary.
Yeah, and there were points this season where Texas Tech was leading the country in time of possession, which is a strange thing to say. Last question from Preston. Sushi for Christmas dinner.
Yeah, I've never had sushi in my life, actually. I've almost had it a couple times.
I'd probably pass and do it like more traditional. I think actually our Christmas dinner, it'd actually be Christmas lunch because we have to get back on the road and come back. I think we're doing prime rib. Looking forward to that again. We did it last year and it was really good.
I have some family out in Kilgore, and every year, like they have a bunch of cattle and pigs out there. Like they basically have a farm that's not really a farm, but every year they bring this Christmas ham. And I don't like ham. I don't really care. I mean, I don't hate ham, but if I'm picking my meats between like roast beef, turkey, beef, ham, ham's probably last or near the bottom of that list. But this ham is pretty good, and I always look forward to that every year.
The only thing that I think we've done a little strangely, I think we've gone out together as a family on either Christmas Eve in the past or like New Year's Eve and done like a Chinese buffet type thing. Sushi on Christmas, though, I'm going to say no.
And you got to have eggnog. Love me some eggnog.
We got some eggnog at the store the other day, and it's like super thin. It's like a just like a regular milk almost. Like this isn't eggnog. This
is no, it's got to be thick.
It's got to be, yeah, real thick.
And what I also look forward to every year is ever since I turned 21, my mom's been getting me basically horchata liquor. The alcohol by volume is only 12%, but it really hits the spot.
Isn't 12% what like most beers are?
Beers, I think, around
if you're not in Oklahoma,
like 5 or something. it's double the amount I think of beers, okay. But it's not like like Sailor Jerry's that's like 35 or 40 or whatever it is.
Kyle Lang or Long, after Utah State took North Texas to the woodshed, how are you feeling about the coaching hire? It was good to see the like a direct comparison, like, okay, this is a Matt Wells team versus a Seth Luttrell team. And it wasn't even close, right? It was a 40-point win for Utah State. It was exciting to see a Yost offense do really well. I still have concerns about Patterson defense, even though they only gave up the 13 points to North Texas. It's also a bowl game, though.
Well, so, North Texas is supposed to be a high-powered offense, right?
Yeah,
but then again,
their quarterback was injured.
So yeah, I was about to say, like I saw a different quarterback, and
yeah, Mason Fine did not play the entire game.
And I think their back quarterback had like a simple name too. I was just laughing at their quarterback names.
Simple.
Well, I mean, like it's like common like English dictionary words. Like it's not LeBar or Rogers or McDonald or. It's like very like simple words.
So it's me saying it's a bowl game. I don't think you can take much from a bowl game. Just like we were saying, you can't decide
Bean,
whether or not
Bean was his name.
Bean.
Very cool. Yeah, Fine and Bean.
like we were saying early on in the season when it was possible that Kingsbury was going to be fired. You can't have your decision rely on the outcome of a bowl game.
No,
but. That's the questions we had, Michael. We do this every episode. What did we learn this week?
I have something this week.
Oh, you did. You came prepared. Good.
But I'm also not going to share it. no, but anyway, I was going to I graduated last May, and one of my former roommates was graduating in December, so I went to his graduation. And, you know, there's this big old commuter lot that everybody parks in. It takes like 30 minutes, an hour to get out. Or you could park some other places too, but I'm not going to quite share my spot because I want the secret with me a little while longer while I'm still in Lubbock.
Is this for like a basketball game or like a football game?
This is anytime you go to a graduation or a basketball game or Vinted USA. I found a parking spot that you can park in and won't be towed, and I can get in and out in 5 minutes.
You're not going to share it.
I have been working this craft. I've been stuck in 45-minute lines my freshman year. I've been working my way to finding the perfect spot, and I think I finally found one.
Which is funny because there for a while, there was somebody in our family graduating at every successive graduation ceremony. Like it was like May, August, December, May. I was like, oh my gosh.
I don't even think they have August ceremonies at Tech anymore. I think they did away with the summer graduations.
Well, this was like 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But there was a year stretch. We went to 5 or 6 graduations. Knowing that would have been helpful back then.
Yeah, this is something I've done ever since I've been at Tech, for not only parking but tickets, like at football games. I used to park. I was by the end zone, and then I was like, well, these seats are bad. You can't see anything on the side of the field. And I worked my way. The best seat is closest to the double T scoreboard by the 40-yard line because you're obviously middle of the field. You can get first row. You don't have to be like a huge crowd because all the crowds go to like the end zone and 10-yard line. So you can get first row without being the crowd. Yet the crowd's still rowdy. You can still have the diehards who wait in line. And you have the drunk people that have been drinking for like 5 hours. So you still get that atmosphere. Basketball games. I start at the baseline. And then I realize I'm 5'6". These Palm Squad members with boots are around the same height as me. I can't see over them. So I moved to the corner. But those were hard to get because everybody goes there. So I think
my... Isn't where that group usually sets up?
Yeah, the group.
Raider
Ride. They sit there now. I used to sit there my freshman year, but I was like, I can't see anything because these girls are taller than me. But anyway, now I moved to three rows back at the midcourt. So the media people aren't too tall for me and I can still enjoy the game.
Because they're usually seated the whole time.
Yeah, but the first row is basically like same level as media people, so you still can't really see them. So I'm usually like three rows up. And then for baseball, I went from sitting behind the visitor dugout, but there's a giant fence in my way I can't see, to behind basically an on-deck circle for the visiting team, but it's hot. I don't want to get sunburned every single time or have to put on suntan lotion every couple hours.
Speaking of, I still have a tan line from a game I went to in the spring.
Still?
When I got burned across the top of my knees. Like, yeah, it's still there. This is 8 months ago, and I still have a dark little triangle on the top of my knees.
Yeah, and now I sit usually a little bit. It's not quite as close, but you can see more of the field. I sit a little bit more further up near the media area because there's also a shade over my head. Also, if it's raining, it doesn't get quite as wet. So,
yeah, the season tickets that we had in our office this year that you sat with us a few times, like they're sneaky good. Like they're usually pretty tickets. Quick to be in the shade because
when
we're...
you weren't sitting there, I sat in your seats.
That's okay
because I was just always banking on no one else showing up.
Well, here's the thing: is I'm not I don't go to Sunday games, so those games I had the tickets for Friday and Saturday. They're almost always going to be open on Sunday. Excuse me, they were on the first base side, the home side, but it was so central.
It's technically first base side, but it's
like.
But, yeah, but if you had to separate it between third base, first base, and home plate, it's more towards home plate than first base.
Yeah, absolutely. It got in the shade real early on. It was in the top section, but like three or four rows up from that dividing. That's a bad thing about those seats. They're low enough.
A lot of foot traffic.
The foot traffic in front of you, especially early on in games, because people are still showing up. You're missing a lot of it.
What I like doing for the red and black series, my favorite seats are right behind home plate, about seven rows up. So the people walking aren't in your way, and you're also in the shade.
Yeah,
I think that'd be if I had to get season tickets. That's exactly where I want them.
It's also a good spot, the ones that we were in, if you want to be on TV. Where my cousins and everything kept saying, hey, man, you're on the TV again. We ended up on the broadcast several times.
Isn't Keith a first base heckler, right?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him about that.
I think, I know he's in that College World Series video of him right next to the netting or whatever.
On the first,
But I think he may be part of that first base heckler group that has the chicken hanging from the netting the whole time.
Yeah, because I know
always teasing people.
Chris Sneed's in that group. I don't know if he's in that group with him, but Keith is as big of a baseball fan as LeBar is, maybe bigger. We'll see. Wow. I don't know.
I'm gonna have to challenge him that one.
Challenge. I'm a big baseball fan. It's not something I've been able to get into, like in terms of like stats wise, be able to track all that.
It's hard to do unless you like go to all the games. It's one of these sports that's hard to keep track of because a lot of them aren't on, like maybe half of them are on TV. So it's just one that's really hard to follow if you're not there.
Right. And there's just so many, like you play nearly or right at 60 games a season, right?
Basically, so, like 55, 60.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to baseball season, but that's where you find out where to sit.
That was a long, what did I learn?
Long, what did I learn answer. The one thing I learned, I'm going to use this time to kind of complain about the throwback game this weekend.
Yes, please. I forgot to mention this.
So LeBar and I both went to the throwback game. We sat together. I ordered my tickets online, and the delivery method said mail, right? But they never showed up. I was like, well, okay, that just means they're probably gonna be at will call.
Which I showed you, like, if you buy them online, they had instructions for me was to will call.
Right.
Like, it was like a, like, I ended up buying them from the athletic office because I don't trust people mailing me anything or will call. I don't trust all that. I've done that before. I don't like it. So it was a $10 ticket for me to buy from athletic office. If I would have done a will call, it was going to cost me $19. $9 fee just to literally
for you to go
carry,
pick it up.
Carry or a bunch of tickets in the box and walk it over to the Coliseum. Right. $9 for that.
Yep. So ours, the delivery method was mail. Saturday comes, no tickets have showed up. So I was like, okay, well, maybe that just means it just apart with all of the online tickets, they're going to be at will call. I go to the Coliseum, last game in the Coliseum, find out the will call line goes like halfway through that west parking lot for the football stadium.
It probably would have been about 30-minute wait.
Which, okay, all things considered, not that big of a deal, right? I got in line a little bit after 6:45 for a 7 o'clock tip, not expecting to be in line for 20 minutes.
An hour off, but yeah. It was a 6 o'clock.
5:45 for a 6 o'clock tip. There it is.
It's okay. I had the whole Luke Wells is black there, so mine's a little my mistake's a little worse.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Wait in line, get all the way. Basically, I'm at the front of the line, and it's 6:05. The game's already started. We can hear it going on. Athletic department staff just opens the door and says, okay, anybody with a will call, like GA will call seat, just walk in. We're not going to make you wait anymore. The line was still halfway into the parking lot. These people were going to miss a majority of the game. I was joking with you because I was going to come sit with you. I was like, well, I'll meet you at halftime, basically, expecting to take that long. So, one, that was a big just disaster that you have. You basically force all everybody that had purchased their tickets online to go through will call and then only have one will call station or whatever you want to call it, yeah, available.
That's the
it was
thing.
Super slow.
Like, unless you bought the ticket in person, which the athletics office is open like 8:30 to 5, right?
Yeah.
So if you have like an 8 to 5, 9 to 5 job, you're probably not getting in unless you go in during break. So I'm assuming a majority, probably like 60-70% of the people either in town for graduation or were working or ordered a home like you, mm-hmm. they're going to be will call. So why do you have 4 or 5 open for tickets and only one for will call? Did you not know how many will call tickets there were going to be?
Yeah.
Not only that, but there was a Friendship Lubbock Cooper game going on prior. So,
which ran a little bit late because I saw that they started yeah. letting people, the fans in at like 5. Like
It said we're letting them in at 5:25. They really let them in around 5:15. But still, okay. That's like 45 minutes basically to get through.
The 7,000 people that were going to show up.
Yeah, 7,000 people. Let's just be generous and say 4,000, 3,000. Let's just be generous and say 3,000 had handheld tickets. So that's 4,000 people in 45 minutes through one line to check your name, get the ticket, and give it to you.
Yep. So that was a big problem. The other thing, I didn't notice when I walked in because I just walked straight in and just went to the seat. Halftime, I get up. I was going to compensate Labar for helping me identify where will call was, which line needed to be in because he was going to go check
which
for me.
But then he's like,
which I'm glad you didn't like wait in line because that would have been stupid. So I get up at halftime to go get like concessions, right? I went to go get popcorn and a drink. They didn't have concessions open. They had basically like a cooler with drinks in it and they had like a rolling popcorn cart. Now they were selling some like Chick-fil-A sandwiches and like barbecue and nachos, like it was a weird combination of stuff, but that had been catered in, right? Like the Chick-fil-A was brought over probably from the restaurant across Marsha Sharp.
Which, by the way, y'all still can't guess which one I currently work at.
That's right, Labar works.
You'll never know.
Yeah, he won't.
Someone's got to make money.
He didn't tell us that he worked at Chick-fil-A for a long time. And then when we found out where it was, or sorry, found out that he worked at Chick-fil-A, won't tell us which one he works at.
I mean, I work in the back, so you won't be able to find me anyway.
My pleasure.
I've said that 0 times since I've been there. Yeah, I don't interact with a lot of customers.
That's okay. But they didn't have like concessions open. Like this is, I understand that they're trying to close down the stadium, But like, but okay, you have a big time game, and like, you don't open up concessions. You have like these really wonky lines.
So here's the thing: like, isn't it being like imploded or something? I assume something like that is going to happen.
There, so the demolition plans were approved at the last board meeting, where we got the Matt Wells contract details. I didn't read the details on the demolition.
But anyway, the point is, if you're not I don't know if you're hosting many events there. If you are hosting events, but if you're not really hosting any. You don't really need to clean it up because it's all going to be broken down anyway, right?
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. I spent the entire halftime, which was 20 minutes or 15 minutes.
It was a shortened 15 minutes, which I don't know why. 15 minutes. Maybe it's because it wasn't on TV, so they didn't have to do all the TV stuff.
And then I came back, like 15 minutes ago?
Yeah, 15 and a half. So you missed the first 5 minutes.
I missed the first 5 minutes of game time, so I probably spent 30 minutes waiting in line to buy two things of popcorn. I saw my box over there. I didn't throw it away. And a drink because the concession lines weren't open. So I missed almost 20 minutes of game time waiting in line.
There's 40 minutes. You spent 5 minutes trying to get in, 5 minutes ordering food, and then I think we left when...
with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah. I have this, like another one of my weird theories, that there's a certain guy, when he comes in for the team, it's okay to leave. Like for the Celtics, is Brad Wanamaker. If he comes in the game, I know the game's over. So Andrew Sorrells comes in the game, like, okay, well, this is over. I'll see you later.
Yep. So we left about 4 minutes.
About 4 minutes, 3:30.
So what I learned, for some reason, special athletic events at Texas Tech not planned super well.
And maybe it's one of these things that because this closing down wasn't that great. And also one thing I forgot to mention about how dang hot it was in there.
Yeah, it was steamy. It was on a cold day. That arena was. Ticket update. My basketball tickets came in the mail on Monday. So the game was on Saturday. I got my tickets in the mail on Monday.
Well, here's the thing. It's the last game at the Coliseum. So maybe, I don't know like how big of a Texas Tech history buffs there's going to be or in college basketball buffs. But maybe that stub's worth something one day. But anyway,
I've got three of them.
Yeah, the point I was trying to get at, the fact it was the last game. But the point I'm trying to get at is, I'm not going to mention this restaurant, but one time, because I actually do semi like this restaurant, but one time I went to a restaurant and they got like terrible service. Like it was dar margaritas and we only got one really because they were never at a table. Our food came out like 15, 20 minutes late. It's like, man, it's the worst experience we ever had. We're never coming back here. Well, the reason probably why is because 2 weeks later it closed down. So they probably were like, well, I don't have a job. I don't have to impress people.
Right.
But maybe it's like a case where it's like the last one there is like, we don't really have to impress anybody. I mean, no one's ever coming back here anyway.
All right, LeBar, thanks for joining us this week on the 23 Personnel podcast, where 23 Personnel may actually be a thing at Texas Tech coming up.
My favorite part of this podcast is us syncing on 23 Personnel.
Yeah.
That was unplanned and just worked out so great.
It was good. For Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.